All right, Avatar: The Last Airbender characters, tag yourself. I'm Uncle Iroh. Athena is obviously Appa.
She's tough.
Obviously.
She'll kill him. Oh.
She can feel things moving with her feet.
She's short and she'll kill a man.
And she's spiky. She's spicy.
I don't know who I'd be.
We can be Uncle Iroh together. Oh, what's the closest to podcasters on in the show? There's not really anything. There's not really a lot of like media because it's so in the past. I do feel like those actors are probably the closest. They're like commenting on their fandom in really annoying ways. That's pretty much us.
Yeah, that's
yeah, that's pretty that's close right. to
us. Star Wars, Transformers, Godzilla, animation, whatever else. Rebels, robots, and etc.
Secret podcast.
This is not a
secret podcast.
Actually, I did accidentally mention this in a conversation last week, and it was, "You have a podcast?" And I was like, I am no longer safe here.
It's a secret podcast.
I was like, I am.
It's Starformers Illumination Night. Welcome to Rebels in Robots in Rotoscoping, episode 67. I'm Cameron.
I'm Rachel.
And this is our bi-weekly chat about Star Wars and
Transformers
and animation, and which includes rotoscoping at times and whatever else we might.
Athena.
And also Athena, our lovely editor who
she looks like she's sitting over there as a big loaf.
Same. We talk about whatever.
Oh my gosh,
else.
Cameron.
What?
I forgot to tell you this week.
Okay.
There's a new JonJon video.
You know, we don't actually directly mention that much on Mike, because they're not fun to talk about in a podcast.
They used to be.
Fair. The last ones are not very good. But yeah, Rachel and I oftentimes, we wait to watch the new JonTron together because it's a long time bonding exercise for us. But this is a podcast where we talk about whatever we both want to talk about. And that normally includes Star Wars or Transformers or Godzilla or animation or the 1980s Australian pop band, Men at Work, which came up this week in our text, our friend's text check, because you were watching The Thing 2011?
Unfortunately.
The remake, prequel, whatever you want to call it.
Unfortunately, I did watch it. I paid the money.
Was that song, was that just being played
it was just
in
the
soundtrack?
Yes,
or
it
was
like
it
in the background.
Diegetic.
Yeah, it was diegetic.
Like, it was diegetically playing. Yes. Nice.
Would not recommend. If you like the first one, you don't need to see the second one.
Had you seen the first one before?
Yeah, we watched it together.
Really?
Like 6 years ago.
Oh, interesting. Well, okay, fair. That would have been surprised if I had not shown it to you before. Throughout this year, we've had a running joke of pushing off a couple of different topics, seemingly to never get to them. One being the Godzilla prequel comic, which we will get to next week. but the other one was that we've been promising since August, since that's when I finished the show, was Avatar: The Last Airbender. And we are finally getting to the show today for realsies. Because I liked it a lot, and Rachel was one of the main people who kept pushing me to watch it. So,
Cameron was like, "I'm not gonna watch it," and then he watched it. He's like, "What's that? What's that clip with Danny DeVito where he's in the movie theater?"
Oh,
he's like,
"Yeah,
he's crying." He's like, "I get it."
Yes, that honestly very accurate. And we'll be chatting about that in a minute. But as always, we have recent thoughts and news. Rachel is our news anchor for the day. I'm going to throw over to you. Rachel, what do you got for us?
So one thing that I think is, hold on, I was in the wrong tab.
You got to scroll past all of the Star Wars fan accounts reacting to the election.
And I did not. Very thorough-minded, very clear-minded, very level-headed.
No,
I wanted to bring about probably the most important news for the country this year that came out in the last couple of days. Toho has confirmed production of a new Godzilla film by Takashi Yamazaki, who directed Godzilla Minus One.
Godzilla for President, baby.
Godzilla for Kriyonk. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally all the information we have.
That's it. It's greenlit.
It not at all surprising, but it's nice to know that it's coming eventually. We have something to look forward to.
I always be looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very excited to see that. I was like, woo! Something else that happened within the last couple of days is his name is Greg Hildebrandt.
Okay.
He recently passed away, and he is one of the famous Star Wars artists. He did some of these. I'm going to show a visual picture. He did this poster for A New Hope.
The really classic original one.
Yeah, the very classic.
The one of Luke holding the lightsaber above his head and Leia's at his feet.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, that's like the iconic one.
Aggressively like sci-fi cover art.
Totally.
So he passed away. So it was kind of, some news. This is like more bare minimum movie news, but the Hasbro president has talked about how there have been conversations with Josh Cooley, who directed Transformers 1, about new potential films for the franchise.
Hmm.
That's it. That's the news. But that's kind of cool. That's promising.
Sure.
You know, it is as promising can be. You know, there's potential. There is a new Transformers mobile game incoming. That's going to come out. Not incoming, sorry. Coming out, and it's just called Transformers Eternal War. It's described as an idle RPG, but that's really it. That's all the information we get right now. If you're curious.
I'm going to check up. I don't believe, whenever we talked about it a few months back, the Transformers racing game that I was actually excited about.
We did talk about it.
I don't remember if we talked about its release date.
Oh.
I'm going to see if I can...
use your elbows, kitty.
Galactic Trials is the name of the game. It says this October, so it should be out. Anyways, go on with your news. I want to find this information. I'm having trouble finding it right now.
Some Star Wars lore for you.
Great.
So, in Tales of the Jedi, we see Ahsoka fight an Inquisitor.
Yes.
And absolutely body him. super cool mask. You know, Star Wars is really good at making really cool guys and then killing them off really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the... Star Wars Encyclopedia book that is releasing later this month, he has been given an official title. He is First Brother, which fills out the rank of who that is, which I think some people were thinking that, like, he's probably a First Brother because it's very early post Order 66, but there's an official First Brother now, so, which is interesting because some people were like, I thought it would have been the Grand Inquisitor, Grand 2-3-4, but guess not. So, yeah, interesting. Now this is just rumors. This is not news. We don't know. This is just a who knows what if potentially. Stephen Knight is no longer writing the new Rey movie that's supposed to come out.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's not rumor, but the rumor is that it's probably not going to make its 2026 release date.
Yeah, I think if you don't have a writer about 2 years before the movie's supposed to come out, I think honestly that's a best case scenario is that it gets delayed. Also, our editor is currently upside down with her little vampire fang sticking out. It's past Halloween.
I'm sorry. Speaking of which, I sent
Rachel what I think was an absolutely hilarious video this week. Of the caption says, "When it's November 1st and you have to put away your Halloween decorations," and the girl's crying and she's trying to shove her black cat into a box. And so I see that you still have your Halloween decoration out with our editor over here.
I can't find a box big enough.
Oh, got her.
She'd actually fit quite well in your equipment bag.
We've proven this before.
Yeah,
yes.
She
likes to fit in there. She's got big Totoro vibes right now with them big eyes.
Kappa.
Speaking of which, I've been reading through that book you gave me. I
know
love
you
it
pictures.
So much.
I'm glad you
it's
like it.
So
I figured
good.
You would get a kick out of it. That's all my news, but I did have some thoughts from last week for our discussion.
I also have one I'd like to share. I was listening to the Andor soundtrack.
Top tier! Oh, wait!
What's
that? We were going to talk about my Wrapped.
Oh.
My music rap.
We can do that if you want to.
We can.
I just realized that Andor would have fit into our category we were talking about last week of autumnal media.
Oh.
Not the whole show per se, but like definitely the stuff. Do you remember the name of the planet that they're trying to heist in the middle part of the show with the eye? That very like Norwegian-y feeling planet. That stuff, the stuff back, what is his home planet? Like
Ferrix.
Ferrix is, well, it's very gray. You know, yeah. Where he grew
for
up.
For government reasons.
Yeah, yeah. Ferrix is very gray. Like, I think the color scheme of the show, the general vibe, the music very much. I think the music is an incredible fall playlist. Mm-hmm. So just kind of a retroactive addition to our autumnal media list from last episode. I would definitely add Andor on there.
Top tier.
So Rachel wanted to talk about her Apple Music Wrapped.
Yes, because Apple Music is the superior music listening service, because they actually give you a wrapped for each week of the year.
Oh, interesting.
But it updates every week. But so since we're getting to the end of the year, so it's about 100 tracks. I'm not going to read all of them. I thought it would be interesting because I believe they are ranked by the amount of times listened to. So here's a couple of notable ones. We've got the Hyperspace Jump from the Ahsoka series.
So good.
It's funny because
so good.
You're going to see some of these and you're going to be like, this track has been out for 2 years and you're still listening to it on a daily basis that it's in your top 100 out of a whole year. Yes. We've got, it's pronounced Skadoosh from Panda 4, and Eulogy from Andor. That is within, I can't count. We've also got Unscathed from Godzilla Minus One.
Nice.
And I Am the Dragon Warrior from Kung Fu Panda 4. Those are half of my top 10.
Very good.
Half of my top 10. Some other iconic ones. We've got another track from Godzilla Minus One, Last.
Uh-huh.
We've got another track from Godzilla Minus One, Divine. We've got Epilogue Part 2 from Ahsoka. Inner Peace from Kung Fu Panda 4. Always iconic, It's Over Now from Rebels.
Incredible. Oh,
It's Over Now.
All-timer right there.
We've got The Rebellion Suite from Andor. If you're curious
that's
what
one.
I listen to.
Yeah. I also, the name is so sus, but a track that really stood out to me in my most recent listen is the track Cousins.
Yeah.
Really excellent. Just very low vibes, very calm. Yeah, I know. The track, the name, ignore the name. That's just what we're going to use as an identifying mark. But it is it just really matches, I think, one of the elements of that show I like a lot is that particular track.
Mm-hmm. Ready to Go from Kenobi.
Okay.
It's very short. I really like it.
Okay.
We've got another Kung Fu Panda track.
Is that like the final, the Ready to Go, is that the final
I don't remember where it's from.
I would guess it's episode two when he leaves Tatooine.
I think it was towards the end.
Interesting. I'd be really curious.
When they pull a switcheroo with the ship.
Ah, that also makes sense.
We've got You're Our Son from Kung Fu Panda 4. We've got Anakin's Dark Deeds.
Uh-huh. Always a good one.
Listening to the Force from Ahsoka. Clem Stone from Andor. It's okay. A really good piece. It's when he's sneaking around, mm-hmm, Ferrix, and he comes across the wall of stones. And Clem is, I don't know if it's covered. It's been a while since I've seen it.
It's Muncho Clock. Let's see if we can pick it up on the mic. There it is. Anyways, continue.
Clem is like his adoptive father, uh-huh, I think, essentially. It's a pretty good one. We've got Resolution from Godzilla Minus One, which is one of the best tracks.
Yeah.
That's the track when they get to work on their Kill Godzilla plan.
I see.
So yeah, good. Nice. It's also what plays when the main character reappears in the jet at the end to sacrifice himself.
Sure. Mm. Yep. Mwah. Yep.
Mwah. We've got Elegy from Godzilla Minus One.
Don't you know we're podcasting down here?
We've got Cassian Will Find Us from Andor, which is towards the end of the series. We've got Hope from Godzilla Minus One.
How long are you going to sit here and just list song titles?
I'm almost to the end. Let me live. We have a bit of a, not a rare appearance, but we have from Rogue One, the track Your Father Would Be Proud.
Oh, that's an all-timer as well. Absolutely.
We then have Godzilla featuring Serj Tankian from Godzilla King of the Monsters. Uh-huh. It's a good song. Uh-huh. It's a good song. we've also, and then just a couple more. We've got I Can Feel It from Kevin Kiner, Through Darkness from, which is from Ahsoka. We've got, or I Can Feel It from Ahsoka. Through Darkness is from Jedi Survivor.
Oh, game very track. Good. Very good.
We've got Honor from Godzilla Minus One. We've got My Master Plan from Kung Fu Panda 4. The Visitor from Jedi Survivor. Godzilla Sweet from Godzilla Minus One. Imperial Thinking from Mando Season 3.
Okay.
Which is during that episode where we find out there's a secret underground Imperial ring. Be the Pit from Kung Fu Panda 4, Rebirth from Godzilla King of the Monsters. We've got Where the Sun Sails and the Moon Sets from Rebels.
Okay, very good.
And then the last one, we've got Pilgrim from Andor. Anyways, out of a track of 100 songs, 50% of it or so, if not more, has been the same tracks I'd be listening to every single year. I'm curious to see what makes like the top 20 because I think
I use YouTube Music and you get a wrapped for like quarters of the year. So from June to August, my top artist was Kevin Kiner, and my number four song was the orchestral version of My Neighbor Totoro, which is a incredible version of the theme. Anything else before you said something from last week you wanted to talk about?
Oh yeah. Also, my replay from 2023, this is like the top.
it's just all Godzilla minus one.
I also have a Totoro track on my 2023.
Nice.
So it kind of made me think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we talked about autumnal movies. And one movie that kind of made me think, I feel like it's got kind of like some similar vibes to Knives Out, not in like,
I swear, if you say Hoodwinked, I'm not talking about Hoodwinked.
I'm actually talking about a different movie. It's actually not as similar as Hoodwinked. But it is, I think it also came out in 2019, maybe?
Okay. That's when Knives Out came out.
Thank you.
Well, it sounded like you were unsure.
No, the movie I'm about to talk about.
I see.
It is 2019. It's not similar in like plot, but similar aesthetic. Ready or Not.
Yeah, good call.
I watched it.
Good call.
I think we went and saw it, and we watched a lot of movies pre-2020.
Uh-huh.
If it was in a theater, we probably saw it within reason. But I rewatched it. It's kind of got a little bit of the dry humor thriller that Knives Out has, but not
It's very critical of the family, and it's very much set within the manor.
Yeah.
And there's an outsider woman who the family kind of doesn't like. Mm-hmm. And they came out the same year. Absolutely. They are kind of like two sides of the same coin,
perhaps. You do have a kooky, older, related woman.
Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But yeah, I rewatched it for the first time because, you know, it was is Halloween season. I was like, let me watch some like scary movies. I forgot just like how damaged her hand gets because she gets shot in the hand.
Yeah.
And there's some moments where you're like,
it's a pretty gnarly movie.
The main character does knock the lights out of a 10-year-old boy for trying to kill her, which is so funny.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't like come out of nowhere, but it kind of does at the same time. You know, it just kind of gives like it felt like some same energy. I was like, can't believe this came out in the same year.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. So Avatar: The Last Airbender is a 2005-2008 Nickelodeon television show.
My family would sit down and watch this together.
That's cool. I definitely want to talk about that in a second, is your context for coming to the show. Way too long of a show to explain the full plot. If you haven't seen it, just watch it. It's incredible. Both of us, two big thumbs up.
I can explain it.
In 30 seconds?
I might.
Go for it.
Okay, so this show is in a universe where there are four different groups of people that can control four different elements: air, water, earth, and fire. There's been a 100-year war from the Fire Nation. They're attempting to have world domination. And in order to do this, they have to take power. The most powerful being in this world is called the Avatar, and they master all four. There hasn't been an Avatar in 100 years, so Fire Nation's just been doing whatever they want at war. Our two main characters, Katara and Sokka, find the Avatar who is thought to have been dead in an iceberg. He's 10 years old. And so he has survived his time on ice. And so the three seasons travel through him, first of all, coming to terms with his fate, and then learning the other elements. He's an airbender. He's the last airbender, because the firebenders wiped out all the airbenders in order to kill the next Avatar, because it cycles through each element. And so the rest of the three seasons are separated into him mastering one of the other elements. Making friends along the way.
And you have the Fire Nation trying to take over everything is the backdrop of it, and the eventual, like, they eventually will have to deal with the Fire Nation and the Fire Lord specifically.
And typically, the hardest element for an Avatar to learn is the opposite. So air and earth and then water and fire.
I would love to hear, how old were you when the show originally came out? Because you said you watched it as it came out.
7.
Oh, wow. So this is way back for you. This is a kind of fundamental.
This man just asked me my age and went, oh, wow.
I'm not saying that you're old now. I'm saying that you were young when it came out.
Yeah, I was young.
And so this is a like a real throwback show for you.
Yeah, it is. Like, I remember watching it. Sorry. Okay, let me get out of the way.
Why are you apologizing? You haven't cared before when you did it.
Because I was talking. I was apologizing myself.
Whoa.
So I remember watching this like with my brother for sure, and my mom, and I remember my dad occasionally like sitting down to watch it too. Like, overall, it was a pretty easy like family pleaser show with, like, for the most part, pretty good morals, like pretty good values of people matter, you know. I feel like I remember when it came out. Because I remember when the first season, back in the days when you had to wait a week for episodes to come out. Foreign concept, I know. I remember season one ending and then having to wait for the next season. I feel like season two is what I probably remember. Like, season two and then season three is what I remember the best. But I really remember watching the first season a ton, because it would come out and then they would rerun it. They'd rerun it, and then in the waiting for the second period, you know, it would just be episodes on TV. So that was like I don't really remember the, I should have done my research and asked my mom. I don't think we all went, let's watch it, but I probably would have been young enough that I think it was on like right after school. Around Nickelodeon, so around the time that we probably would have been watching it, and you know, when if you're a parent, you kind of like go, "Oh, our kids watching us? It's kind of interesting." So I think that's probably how it started.
That's cool.
Because I remember, I think when the finale came out, I'm gonna laugh if I'm totally fabricating memories, and my mom texts me later in the week and she goes, "You are totally wrong," because then I will own up to it next time. But I feel like I remember like when the series finale came out. At some point, we all watched it.
Sure.
Before you should keep yapping, because I'm going to show you something that I should have pulled out.
Okay. So, context for me watching the show. So much of my life, people have told me to watch it. And then it never really stuck. I didn't have cable growing up. It didn't really strike my interest. And so none of my friends really, I don't remember any of my friends being big fans of it. But as I get older, and it was on Netflix for a long, and actually it still might be on Netflix, but it was really, really available on streaming for a long time. And as I got older, people still kept recommending it to me, and people would be like, Cameron, I'm surprised you specifically have not watched this show. I think you would like it. But I got a lot of joy out of telling people I had not seen it, because they would be so shocked and or frustrated with me that was something I didn't really want to give up. But Allison was really interested in watching it because she had also not seen it. You were a big recommendation on it. Megan really recommended it. Caleb loves it. So a lot of people connected to this podcast really loved it. Allison, I decided to watch it earlier this year over the summer, and we were hooked very quickly. I think I had seen the first episode at some point. Mm-hmm. Now, weirdly enough, I had seen the live action movie because I watched all of M. Night Shyamalan's movies. Mm. And at the time when I watched the movie, I definitely said this is a bad movie, but I was like,
it's a bad movie.
I didn't hate it, as in the sense of I thought it was an enjoyable, dumb movie that had pretty good visual effects. Like, it is a well-made movie for the most part. And I thought it was, like, an interesting concept. In retrospect, I realized anything that I liked about the movie narratively was because it was to say watered down is an understatement, an incredibly pale imitation of an incredible story. And that's why if you had not seen the actual show, the movie is actually a pretty decent narrative because it is trying to do an actual good story and obviously failing in hindsight. Mm-hmm. I totally understand why now people hate that movie, because it is totally butchering this incredible story with most of the characters. And the narrative is probably fine the way it's represented in the film, but the characters, because that is what makes this show ultimately. Mm-hmm. Television, it is tough to maintain the length a television show has to exist for the majority of a time without strong characters. And these characters are not only likable, they're multifaceted, they're three-dimensional, they grow, they have shortcomings. And we can talk about this a little bit more, but like, I'm actually kind of glad that I saw the movie first, just for the sake of it really highlighted what is so incredible about the show.
You didn't face the same disappointment the rest of us did when we went, oh my gosh, it's getting a movie, and then we came out of it and went,
yeah. But also, I don't even know why you make the movie. The show is such a cartoon.
Because money,
it is such Cameron. It hurt the brand, so maybe it was a bad idea. But so anyways, we watched the show, we loved it, burned through it over the summer. I'm glad we're talking about it. I think there is a lot to talk about. I will say it is. What is Athena doing?
Athena just scared herself.
In like a reflection, or what did she do?
She scared herself by bumping into that paper and she whipped around.
But I will say the show has faded from my memory a bit. We finished it in August, so it has been a couple months. I would say I can totally understand that if you watch the show in real time, you spend a lot more time over course of time getting to know these characters. I think the anticipation for the next episode, the anticipation for the next season, mm-hmm. would only build your connection to it, as opposed to me and Allison, who really enjoyed it, but we watched it in a short span of time. So we didn't build as strong of a connection to it. I do look forward to, over time, coming back to it in the future and seeing how well it does for me. You know, eventually maybe showing other people, showing my kids in the future. I think I can see that building a stronger connection with myself to it. But as of now, I think it's a really good show, but it hasn't like super stuck with me. Mm. But it is, there are so few television shows I have any desire to ever rewatch. Even shows I like a lot, I don't rewatch a lot of television. It is a show I would at some point very much look forward to seeing again.
Nice. I was going to show you something, but I realized I don't think I actually have them. They're either somewhere in here, which I don't think that is correct, or they are somewhere in my parents' home. And if they're not there, I don't know where they are.
So tell me,
I think they're at my parents' home.
What do you think is the main thing that makes you continue to love this show?
I wasn't finished with my sentence.
Oh.
I was going to show you. We had all three seasons on DVD.
Oh, I see.
That's all I was going to say. Can you repeat your question?
What would you say is the main reason you would say the show persists for you, continues to be a show that
I think because it has For me or in general?
For you.
For me, I think it's because a show that took care in developing its characters and stuck to it.
Yeah.
When there are consequences, it sticks with the characters. I'm going to use an example. I think it's in the first season. I think it's before they get to Kyoshi Island. They meet the trio, Katara, Aang, and Sokka, meet a firebender.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not like a Fire Nation firebender. Yeah. He's just kind of a dude that kind of lives out in the woods. And yeah, he's like, yeah. I'm not kidding.
He recognizes the evil of the, at least the current yes. iteration of the Fire Nation.
And so Aang wants him to teach him firebending. And mm-hmm. he's like, and this guy's like, I don't think that's a good idea. Mm. He doesn't want to. I think he starts with the basics, but because Aang is so inexperienced, kind of as an airbender, I think there are easy, quote-unquote, elements to start with. I think the next easiest one is technically water. Fire is dangerous. It burns out of control, so if you're not good at it, you can harm people. And so he gets reckless, and he ends up burning Katara.
Mm-hmm.
That sticks with him well into when he actually starts learning how to firebend.
Yeah.
He has mastered water and earth and air, but that still sticks with him. And he's like, it still haunts him. Aang does not want to kill people. He doesn't really want to hurt people. He just kind of wants to stop them. And even there are very compelling characters on the bad guy side too.
Mm-hmm.
You have Zuko, who is trying to earn his father's approval. Love. If you've been on the internet for the past 15, 20 years, honor, that's the joke. But he's been ousted as his position as firstborn son,
mm-hmm.
heir to the Fire Nation. He's trying to capture the Avatar to bring him back and gain his father's honor for disrespecting him. Alongside him, you have his uncle Iroh, who is one of the best characters in the whole show, because he is a part of the Fire Nation, but he is a very, I don't want to say gray, but he's a very complicated, quote unquote, bad guy who's mm-hmm. not actually a bad guy.
Yeah,
he cares for his nephew and is actually like the father Zuko needed.
Mm-hmm.
Like he cared for him and stuck with him. And that is unwavering throughout the whole three seasons, no matter what Zuko has done. And then one thing that sticks is I don't know if I'm like Athena's chatty tonight. I don't know if I'm exaggerating, but I think Zuko's redemption taking the course of three seasons
mm-hmm. yeah
is probably, I would say, one of the best redemptions in like modern shows.
Yeah, because I came in knowing he changed at some point.
Oh, see, and witnessing that real time
mm-hmm.
it's such a different experience.
What was interesting for me is that he does for a very short time, like one episode, he switches sides
yes.
at the end of season two.
Yeah.
And then doubles down back to the Fire Nation side. So I thought, oh, that's the whole turn.
Cameron said, this was terrible.
Yeah. And so I did not know he would turn back around again halfway through season three.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the patience, because you kind of know it's coming, even if you knew nothing going in. It's kind of obvious.
The signs are
focusing on this character so much, and there's an obvious final bad guy.
You're watching episodes like, why is he getting his own episode?
Mm-hmm, exactly. And it would be like really tragic for a kid show if this character did not turn around at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know for sure. It's a great show. It's really morally complicated. Maybe this character won't turn around.
Mm-hmm.
And the way in which he turns around eventually is so organic and natural to the character and natural for his progression.
Zuko here. Ugh, secondhand embarrassment. A whole episode of secondhand embarrassment. It paces itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It allows you to grow and you see why characters are the way they are.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm going to use a more recent example, and I don't know if this is the best example to use. I am going to use The Acolyte. The short-term storytelling, I think, missed out on a lot of growth that we could have had, yeah, and a lot of inner turmoil that you get with longer shows that allows the show to breathe and allows you to actually get to know the characters on that deeper level. So you get to the point of understanding this is why the way they're acting. I think another compelling character is, people are loud tonight. I love Toph. She's my girl. Toph is actually, for 2005. So Toph is blind, which for 2005 is some great disability representation.
Sure.
And she's from like a high, I don't know, not like royal, but like a high class family from the Earth Kingdom. And she loves earthbending, but her parents won't let her do it.
Yep.
Because they're afraid for her. She's like, oh, she's blind. She's too fragile. She's absolutely destroying anyone she fights.
Yep.
And so you have this story where she's actually a stronger earthbender because, because of her blindness. That's how she sees. Mm-hmm. And so that is really cool, I think, for kids to see. You have this you also have, I don't know if it's the end of season one or season two, I can't remember his name. I believe they're technically non-benders, but when they find the other air temple, it's not inhabited by air nomads. It's just non-benders. And one of them is a boy in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
They honestly are addressing a lot of like some real life conversations that kids might not be exposed to.
That's true.
So you have a lot of topics that are brought into. You have navigating life with a disability. You have dysfunctional families. You have abusive families. You mm-hmm. have but you have Aang, who's entirely alone in his culture. He has his mm-hmm. friends. He is the last one. You have genocide. That is the term I'm looking for. I'm so sorry. You have,
yes,
targeted genocide. You have
which you're talking about consequences. I don't know. There's very possibly more additional stuff beyond the show that I don't know about. But within the actual show itself, the airbenders don't come back. I totally expected some sort of BS cop-out at the end.
Oh, Cameron.
What?
No, I'm just reacting.
I anticipated by the end of the show that there would be some sort of BS of they were hiding somewhere. And they are all actually dead, as far as the show is concerned.
Well, Korra, Legend of Korra, yeah, which we will not be covering.
Mm-hmm. But it would make sense that they would come back.
Oh, like they've been hiding this whole time. Yeah. They've been waiting for the Avatar to come back and save them. No, he's the last one. And there's actually some, I think one of the most like heartbreaking episodes is Aang is entirely unaware of what has happened to his people. And Katara and Sokka kind of know. Like, they're like, mm-hmm. it's yep. bad. We probably shouldn't go to your temple. But he's like, let's go. And they get there. And it's there's no one there. It's decimated. And it's not until they explore a little bit more that they find body remnants uh-huh. of armor and skeletons. And it's such... it's like a gut punch. No matter what age you're at,
mm-hmm.
it's just you have this 10-year-old boy who wants to go home, and his family's gone.
Yep. So, quick lore question: I have not watched Legend of Korra, which is the sequel show, which is like 100 years later or something.
Yeah,
like
it's after the next, it's the next Avatar cycle. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, 100 years or so, give or take. It's the next Avatar cycle.
Are the Airbenders back in that show? Have they like repopulated?
Are they back? Yes, repopulated. Questionable.
Who are they? What are they?
They're Aang's kids. They
How many?
So
you think not? There's a few of them.
Aang and Katara had 3 children.
Uh huh. And that's the Airbender nation.
Okay, first, let me speak.
Okay.
There are 3 children, whose names I don't remember, but one is Tengsun. Hold on. I don't know about you, but Apple has like absolutely ruined its autocorrect for me. Okay, so Bumi, who is named after his friend Bumi, this is their first son, a non-bender. I think spoilers for Legend of Korra, he actually is a bender. He's actually like a late bloomer, and I think he might be able to airbend. Unconfirmed. They have a daughter, Kaya, who I am looking at the names because I don't know. She's a waterbender. But the youngest son, Tenzin, he was the only like airbender that was an airbender like from the beginning. I don't think Bumi found out he was a bender until way after like Aang was dead. Because Aang died like kind of young.
Interesting.
So Tenzin was actually the only like airbending child Aang knew about, and his children are airbenders.
I see.
So there are not a lot, but I think one of the big conflicts in Legend of Korra is benders and non-benders. Mm. There's basically been like an industrial revolution post-war. You know, the children yearn for the mines. and I don't know if it went down a route of teaching non-benders to bend. But there are, I do believe there is like an Airbender Academy later in the series, but don't quote me on that because I only watched, I think, the first 2 episodes and then I quit.
I see. Fair. I was just curious. But that just further illustrates my point, which is that he didn't just pull something out of their butt and bring back the Airbenders for a happy ending.
They're dead.
So you started off talking about characters, which I think you were talking about the characters you like and what you like about the characters, but I think is super pivotal to this show. And I think what additionally, on top of the writing, what makes these characters work is the voice acting.
And here's some good voice actors.
While I really love movies, I will always choose film over television as a medium. What television animation often gets right over, at least American animated films, is voice casting. Movies are really obsessed with casting celebrities, which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. Pixar is a great example of they can oftentimes pull celebrities in and give them really good direction and writing and use them really well. But like, you know, other ones like DreamWorks or Blue Sky or just straight up Disney will not use them as well. Mm-hmm. Television oftentimes, just I think because of budgetary constraints, are forced to. Like I remember a few years back I watched the Jimmy Neutron movie for the first time as an adult and was blown away by the voice. It's a terrible movie, but we watched
that one together.
Yeah. I was blown away by the voice acting. And then I looked at the cast. I was like, oh, these are all voice actors. They're not celebrities. And that was because they were planning on making a television show. So they had to set that up. But like that movie, I think a big reason why something I would say is a terribly animated, terribly written show and movie, Jimmy Neutron, has stuck so well because the characters are brought to life by actual voice actors. Mm-hmm. And I think this show is the same. Just a phenomenal cast. We have 2 Rebels and Robots legends, Dee Bradley Baker and Mark Hamill in there. Dee Bradley.
Mark Hamill's in it?
You didn't know this?
No.
You're serious.
Who is he?
He's the Fire Lord.
Oh, I did.
It's such an obvious Mark Hamill voice. Dee Bradley is the voice of Appa and Momo, the 2 animal sidekicks, which, tangent, I like this show a lot. I hate Momo so much. He is so redundant.
He kind of gives peanut vibes.
Yeah, my cat. Yeah. I think Peanut has only been referenced once in a post-credits moment and on the pod.
So if you don't stay for the credits.
Yeah, so if you didn't listen to that, I do have a cat now. His name is Peanut. You're right. He does. But Peanut is real and not redundant in my household. Momo is an incredible animal psychic. Appa is an incredible animal sidekick, and Momo contributes nothing. Not on a plot level, not on a fundamental level, not on an entertainment level.
The only thing he does plot wise is he incidentally leads the gang to Monk Gyatso's body in that episode in the first season. I'm just saying.
So because the way he's introduced, if I'm remembering correctly, as like
animal.
It implied that he's Aang's like spirit guide or something. Like they're discussing the concept. I might be misremembering, but I seem to recall they were discussing something along those lines. And then he showed up because he's the only thing that they discover when they go back to the air temple. Mm-hmm. The show was strongly implying that there was some sort of spiritual significance of this character in relationship to Aang.
Interesting, because I think I took it as Aang being very so optimistic he's kind of blind to the reality around him.
That's very possible, but I just feel like nothing ever came from Momo existing. Aang has a very strong relationship to Appa. Appa disappearing in season 2 is heartbreaking, and it crushes Aang, and it like, you want to talk about consequences.
It messes with him.
Yeah, that is great.
It is crazy how Aang was like, I'm not going to kill the Fire Lord. He almost murdered the guys that took Appa.
Yeah.
Like, he legitimately was about to kill those guys.
No one would care if Momo disappeared. You wouldn't notice if Momo disappeared. You could just delete him from the show and nothing would change. I harp on this because the show is so good. The main characters are so strongly written. And I think the show is so close to perfect, and Momo is just so unnecessary.
See, I feel like if you watch it 1 week at a time, you don't get so much Momo exposure.
Sure, that's possible, but I don't know. Like, if Appa didn't exist, I'd be like, oh, he's a fun, like, Momo would not be my favorite, but he would fill a slot that would understand why you have it. I just don't get why he's there. Mm-hmm. It's not even like, oh, well, Aang has Appa and Zuko has like a character, an animal. Momo is also Aang's. Like, he is so redundant. It just bugs the crap out of me.
He's the apartment cat.
Mm-hmm. It was just, it's always fun to have a character to hate, and that is number one public enemy for me in this show. Totally off topic from what we were talking about. We're talking about Dee Bradley. I'm actually going to take another quick detour that I think you'll find entertaining. It never ceases to amaze me the characters Dee Bradley has played that I did not know. Every time I look at his IMDb, I find a new one. Because it's his IMDb, for context, Dee Bradley, which if you don't remember, we love him because he's the voice of all the clones. Every single clone, including all of the Bad Batch. Yes, it's not in the movies, but in the Clone Wars and in Rebels and all that. He has over 700 credited roles.
Oh my gosh.
He is...
What kind of royalties do you think he gets?
Well, that's a great question. He is both Daffy Duck and the Tasmanian Devil in Space Jam, which is wild. I would imagine that's good.
Kind of like how for 40 years, for 30 years, if there is an animal, it was Frank Welker. Uh-huh. And now it's Dee Bradley Baker. Yep.
In Star Wars, I did not realize he is Nubs. From the
We've
Star
Wars, about this.
I do not remember talking about this at all.
Definitely
in the Star Wars Young Jedi Adventures cartoon currently going, which to be fair, I have not seen, but he did the voice. He did the voice even in the Lego special that we watched.
Yeah, we talked about that when we talked about the Lego special.
Yeah, I guess I totally forgot.
Cameron blanked.
I don't have any memory of that, but the one that really took me off guard.
I have no memory of this place.
The one that really, really took me off guard that I think you're going to really appreciate is in the video game for the movie The Mummy, Tomb Raider of the Dragon Emperor, he voices Rick O'Connell. the main character.
What a deep pick, huh?
You have to remember, I'm totally blanking on that actor's name, who the original Rick O'Connell.
Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser, an actor you love, a character you love, the Mummy movies.
A man I love.
Uh-huh. So anyways, okay. So we're back to talking about the voice acting.
I do think it's funny because we're not going to talk about Legend of Korra. Uh-huh. But J.J. Simmons is in Legend of Korra.
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons, sorry.
Yeah. That's fun.
His character looks like him.
That's great.
I'll pull him up.
So other voice actors in the original Avatar The Last Airbender. You got as... Nice. Yep. It's pretty much like Aang with a beard. It's
literally J.K. Simmons.
You got Mae Whitman as Katara, who is actually... I was talking about them casting actual voice actors. She's primarily a live-action actor. She's in... I'm totally blanking on the name of the show. Arrested Development, one of my favorite shows. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite movies, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Another pretty decent movie, Perks of Being a Wallflower. But she kills it in this. Like, it is... I feel like that's an incredible... Probably, honestly, if I'm thinking about it, probably the most difficult character to pull off. And because she is... Obviously, she has to be likable. But she's also a know-it-all. But, like... This character could so easily have been pigeonholed. Like, especially children's cartoons are gonna pigeonhole characters into like one personality type. And I don't know if you're familiar with this phrase, the Flanderization of a character. That Flanders was the neighbor from Simpsons, who's originally had sort of interesting dynamics. And as time went on, he just became just an annoying Christian neighbor. He became very flat. And people use that term to like a character. Over time in television shows, eventually just becomes the one personality trait. But what's great about Avatar Last Airbender is the characters actually become more complex as time goes on. And Katara is a character whose development is more... it's subtle. It's not as dramatic. All the other characters, I feel like their change... You watch one episode with them, you know what their character development is going to be by the end. But Katara's development is a lot more subtle. And I think that voice performance really brings out her humanity and makes her feel like much more than a cartoon character, which I think a less talented, less empathetic voice performance would have made her much more of a cartoon character.
They cast children.
That's to true. Play children, young. Which helps. Yes.
I mean, and then you have Grey Delisle, who... if you look at her IMDb, she's Scooby-Doo. She's in Scooby-Doo Zombie Island, which relates to the podcast.
As who is this voice actress? What's her role?
So Grey Delisle is Azula in Avatar The Last Airbender.
Did she get married or something? Because I'm seeing Grey Griffin.
Maybe.
I'm just curious why I'm getting a totally different name. Yeah, Grey Delisa is what you... If you Google search Grey Griffin, she comes up as Grey Delisa.
Yeah, she's in a bunch...
Sometimes credited as Grey Griffin. Huh.
She's in a...
Weird.
She's in a bunch of Scooby-Doo. She plays Daphne pretty much for the most part. She's in a lot of cartoons.
Who is she in Fairly Odd Parents? She just voices. Is she not the main character?
Don't know. I didn't see that. This one.
It showed up as one of her known as.
This one only says Channel Chasers, which is the TV movie that they had.
Yeah, it looks like she was just various characters. Oh, is she really?
She's Vicky. That's funny.
That's great.
Checks out.
She's Maz Kanata in Lego Star Wars.
I did see that. I didn't bring it up yet. I think when we looked at the cast, I was like, I know that person. You have Ron Perlman as Sozin, who is...
why can I know that name, but for some reason is... Oh, Hellboy. Yeah. Yes. Another phenomenal voice actor. Absolutely. Yeah, Ron Perlman, one of the greats. There's a bunch of like great actors who show up very... Clancy Brown, who's very famously Mr. Krabs.
Jason Isaacs.
Who would then go on and be the Grand Inquisitor in Rebels.
Hello.
And I feel like there's another Clone Wars connection here. Phil Lamar, who's a Clone Wars, he plays, he's the Earth King in Avatar The Last Airbender, and he is Kit Fisto in the Clone Wars. Yeah, you have, like, Robert Patrick show up for two episodes. Yep. Robert Patrick is the T-1000 in Terminator 2. James Hong, one of the great voice actors who we love as Poe's Goose Dad in Kung Fu Panda. John DiMaggio, one of the all-time greats, who's famous for being Bender and Jake the Dog.
Mako.
Oh, of course. I mean, Mako is Uncle Iroh, and he's just one of the great voice actors in anime.
You say Greg Baldwin?
I did not. I'm not actually sure who that is by name.
He replaced Iroh Mako afterward.
Yes.
But he was also in Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, is he really?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And yeah, I mean, the point we're getting at here is just a lot of great voice performances.
And a lot of them are not only like they're live action, but it works well enough that, I mean, granted, I was not very old, but I feel like there are voices that you hear and you don't automatically go, oh, this is this famous actor.
Yeah, absolutely.
They blend in.
Yes. You've got Dante Basco as...
Zuko.
Anytime
he's at a panel, that's just his voice.
He, live action wise, he is Rufio from Robin Hood's Hook, which is... If you don't know, Hook is... Robin Williams is grown-up Peter Pan. He goes back. He's forgotten everything. He has to relearn how to be Peter Pan.
Did you mean to say Robin Williams' Hook?
What did I say?
Robin Hood's Hook? And I was like...
funny. No. Yeah, sorry. Robin Williams' Hook. Okay, Robin Williams plays grown Peter Pan. He gets to go back, relearn how to be Peter Pan. And Rufio is the leader of the Lost Boys in his absence. And I'm trying to set an image here for a reason. Hook is a very 90s movie. Also, if you're looking at your watch, it is Crunch O'Clock again, if you can hear that in the background. And Rufio is such a 90s character. He skateboards. He's got a mohawk. And I want to point this out because this is Dante Basco's most famous role prior to Avatar The Last Airbender, as far as I know, at least. And that could have been... Zuko. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. Zuko could have been an incredibly cringy character. He could have been too...
He's got a few cringe
ones. On purpose, though. Yes, so that's what I'm trying to get to, is this
narrative,
performance...
Narrative required per cringe.
Dante Basco really nails... He walks a razor thin line with this character between his... He's very angsty. He's very angry. And that's in a majority of his early episodes where he's just fueled by spite and anger. And that could have come off as cringy. But I think the fact that the character is only like 16 years old, you feel it. It's very authentic.
Lore accurate 16-year-old.
And then later, when you get more into the character trying to change and you get into his romance with the one girl whose name I'm totally blanking on. It's not May. Is it May? Okay. That could have been cringy. Again, feels authentic. And then when he starts trying to blend in and like make himself likable to the good guys, he is intentionally cringy. And it comes again off as simply authentic. At any given point, this character never feels like a cartoon character. He feels like a real person. Again, the voice performance. This guy was a cringy 90s movie character, and I feel like he really knew how to walk this line. It is a phenomenal voice performance. I feel like he has a couple other very famous voice performances that I'm not seeing.
It is one of those things that now, like, whenever you hear Dante in something, you're like, oh, that's Zuko.
Yeah, I'm trying to find another thing that I've seen him do this in.
He's been in the Kung Fu Panda shows.
Oh, he did it 4 episodes, Jai-Kel in Star Wars Rebels. Again,
you're right. In season 1, when Ezra sneaks into the Imperial Academy,
mm-hmm.
because the second he opened his mouth, I went, that's not Zuko. I was like, that's Zuko.
I think that's the main one for me. It looks like he did some Final Fantasy, which really checks out for him. Other than that, I don't think I've ever... He did all 3 of the skate video games, which are like skateboarding video games, which really checks out for him as well. I never saw this show, but this also checks out. Jake Long, American Dragon.
I watched that show.
That checks out.
IMDb just lied to me. He said he was a part of Kung Fu Panda 4. Danny Phantom, The Lion Guard.
No. Are you serious?
That can't be right.
So
I feel no, that's not right, because I feel like my phone is like showing me people in it and then just like randomly populating cast members. You know who else is in The Lion Guard?
Last thing I wanted to talk about is you mentioned pacing earlier, which I think is really great, because you mentioned them giving him these characters space to develop. That for me is a big reason I hate television in general, is too many shows are too long, both number of episodes, length of episodes, number of seasons. Almost every TV show that exists goes on for longer than it should. This is one of the incredibly rare TV shows that one had a definite end point, so they knew where they were going, but also the number of episodes is a lot. Yeah, like 20 some episode seasons.
So, sorry, everything I just said that Dante Bosco was in was a lie.
I was thinking that seemed weird because I was not seeing it.
I clicked on his icon and it took me to James C.
Okay, I see.
And that's so weird. Sorry. That's super annoying. Maybe it was a long episode.
Avatar The Last Airbender has a lot of episodes. Even though I think it nailed it with three seasons, it's probably the perfect number of seasons for almost any show. Mm-hmm. It's in that classic era where TV shows were still having 20-some episode seasons, which is a lot of, especially for a show that's, yes, it's serialized, there's an ongoing narrative, but most episodes have a contained narrative.
You do get the beach episode,
which is also good.
I know, like, it's actually good.
They have, I think this show at any point,
I think it kind of reminds you that, like, oh yeah, these were kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is easy, especially with the firebenders. Yeah, it's easy to forget. Any given element of this show, if it wasn't good, I think the whole thing would fall apart. The number of characters, the various threads they're trying to pull off, the various tones they're trying to pull off, because this show oscillates between episodes and within episodes between genuinely funny and genuinely like heartfelt and genuinely terrifying, and also sometimes visually astonishing as well.
Sorry, not to interrupt.
No, go ahead. Say your
point. I was going to say, I think an example is the season finale of the first season, mm-hmm. when Aang enters the spirit realm for the first time.
Absolutely.
That's scary.
Yeah, I agree.
Whole sequence, you're looking like, oh my gosh, this 10-year-old. Aang's like, I'm a pacifist, I'm not gonna kill people. People definitely died.
but you see
him at his power for
the tones, the number of episodes, the different things they're trying to accomplish, if any of those things were not good, if they couldn't handle the tone balance, if they couldn't handle all, because there are some shows I really like one half of the show, like one group of characters, but there'll be another group of characters I despise. If you did not enjoy the main cast or the firebenders or the random one-off episodes or the funny bits or the serious bits or the action or the animation was bad or the voice for it was bad, like if any one of those things is bad, it would bring the whole show would not work, because it all needs to work together, and it freaking does. And what that culminates in is individual episodes, even if they're not contributing to the overall plot, are often almost always very good in and of themselves as a single episode of television.
And they're contributing to the characters.
Exactly. Which then contributes to the overall plot. There are so many. That was what we were constantly so frustrated about with Bad Batch, was that Bad Batch would have these one-off episodes, which we kept saying was not inherently bad.
No.
But we would just walk away with the episode like nothing was learned, nothing was accomplished, not plot-wise, character-wise. I always remember the racing episode from season 2 where it was Tech doing the racing, and all we did was like, oh, Tech is smart? We already knew this. Nothing was accomplished in that episode. My mind always goes back to that, because it was just like,
it's like we see them struggle, but we don't actually get anything past the surface.
Exactly. A show like Avatar The Last Airbender with so many episodes, actually, you would feel like, oh, they can, like, waste an episode. They can do an episode that's just nothing. They can get away with it. It'd be understandable that you could totally slack on an episode so you could spend more time writing another episode, like writing the finale, so it's good. Totally understandable. it rarely ever felt like they were slacking off an episode, as opposed to a show like Bad Batch, where you have significantly fewer episodes, so you'd feel like you can't waste an episode because you need the plot to move along, and they were constantly wasting it. It always constantly felt like they were constantly slacking off.
One that kind of comes to mind is an episode that overall is not related to the narrative, is the Swamp Spirit episode. When they're helping that, when the gang are helping that, I don't know, it's like season one or season two.
I think it's two.
Yeah. They've kind of come across a village that's kind of like at the mercy of a nearby, like, water, like, quote unquote, water steam plant, some form of industrial plant that the Fire Nation has. It's polluting their water. And they're talking about how their protector is a swamp spirit, who's destroying the firebender's stuff. And you kind of go the whole time because you're thinking, through the show, you've been introduced to the spirit realm, mm-hmm. or whatever it's called. Yeah. You know it's a way. The twist is that it was Katara.
Yes.
That she took on, because she could waterbend, she took on, like, the form of the swamp spirit. She dressed up as her and kind of started helping out, because they were kind of in hiding. You know, you can't really, like, show that you're not a firebender. And they end up, like, saving this factory. But you kind of get to see a side of Katara that I don't think you see a whole lot, because so much of this show, she's kind of the mom friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is not a bad trait to have.
Yeah.
But that's her role. And so seeing those episodes that actually get to focus on her as an individual are really nice. Because she probably could have just come out no disguise and just helped them. But she took care in this village's beliefs and didn't shatter that for them. And then you actually see a real reveal of the swamp spirit later.
Yeah.
So that is an episode that overall doesn't really contribute to the narrative. It's almost like a little side plot, but it contributes a lot to one character, which is so necessary, especially in a long show.
Yeah, because when they get around to the really important episodes where everything kind of culminates, whatever the show's been building to at that point comes to a head, all the characters have their motivations. You understand why the characters mm-hmm. either have power, don't have power. They're strong in that moment. They're weak in that moment. It's been built up so that it makes sense. Do you have any final notes?
It's good. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. I honestly think it's a really good encapsulated story that fleshes out all the storylines. It's a rather satisfying end with some... It's got some emotional moments. If you're someone who is like, well, if you're someone who's listening to our podcast, but you also think like animated shows are for kids, props to you for sticking with us for 67 episodes. it is a good show and it holds up well.
Genuinely well written, genuinely like
mature. It looks
mature.
Good too.
Oh, beautifully
animated. It's a gorgeous
animated.
Art style. The characters are likable. And if you're like, well, I don't know how I feel about like kids being the main characters. Look, kids are annoying. So are adults. Like, there are adults in this show that you're like, this guy's terrible. It's good. The voice performances are amazing. And honestly, it's such a good... If you like Found Family, this is a long-form Found Family show that you are going to enjoy.
Agreed. Final question I wanted to end on is favorite character.
It's tough.
Who?
Toph.
Oh, you already said that.
Well, right. I also like Suki. Okay, I have a couple. Okay. I feel like reoccurring character, like main, out of the main, Toph.
Mm-hmm.
Reoccurring side character would probably be Suki. I also love Avatar Kyoshi. She stands on business. Because in season two, when there was a whole group that were like, Avatar Kyoshi's evil, and Avatar Kyoshi like shows up in spirit form, she's like, I killed that guy because he sucked. Girl boss, I support women's rights and wrongs. But she's not wrong. So anyways, but probably Toph has always been my favorite.
For me, definitely Appa, the air bison, who is very clearly inspired by Totoro. It's if Totoro also had a murderous streak, I think. I don't know if Appa ever kills anyone, but he's like a war beast.
He's probably complicit.
He's like if you combine Totoro with the cat bus, actually, because he's got multiple limbs and he's a transportation. So I am always a sucker for this animal sidekick that is still mostly an animal, but clearly has a personality, but can't talk.
Cameron's a big fan of cuddly animal sidekicks.
Not just cuddly though, like the like sarcastic animal that can't talk, but has a lot of personality, emotes through their body, physical performance, and like eyes.
So I have two questions to ask.
Okay.
Sorry, continue. But
So I just think he really ties the show together. I think it, again, the Totoro, I love Totoro. He's got big Totoro vibes, but he also has multiple limbs and is a mode of transportation and has some energy, just like the cat bus from Totoro.
Okay, I have two questions for you. I have a couple questions, actually, now, because you've been asking me questions.
Okay.
What was, I'd be curious to see, like, what, if there are any, like, big part, maybe even not big, just like any parts that stuck with you, like on an emotional aspect.
Yeah, good, really good question. I think the moment that got me the biggest is, so there's an episode in season two when they're in the Earth City.
Tales of Bossing Say.
Where you have multiple stories and you have an incredible, of course, Uncle Iroh steals the show as always. And it's incredible narrative of him, like, a guy tries to steal from him, and instead of, like, killing him, like, he absolutely could, he, like, teaches him. It's like the teach a man to fish sort of lesson. And he turns this man's life around, and he does all these other good deeds. And at the end of the day, you figure out it's because of his lost love. His, like, his wife who died there. His son who died there.
When the Fire Nation took over, or, like, led the attack on Bossing Say, Iroh led it. And his son died.
Yes. And so the episode ends with him at the gravestone. So you explain why this particular day was so important to him. And then the absolute audacity of these guys drop in remembrance of Mako, the voice actor who had died in real life. Mm-hmm. Insane all-time episode, dude.
Because he sings to his son's grave.
Yeah.
And
so good.
Look at me.
Like, this is crying. Like, this is art. Like, we're sitting here talking about this because it's not just a piece of entertainment. This is art is a fundamental element of human life. And art connects us to ourselves, connects us to each other, connects us to the past, connects us to the future. Art is so important to our spiritual life, to our intellectual life. And this show is art. And I will die on that hill.
And that's where Dave Filoni started going, oh, yeah, I'm really good at emotionally punching people through TV screens. So for you, your favorite character is Appa. How did you feel about Appa's lost days?
I don't know how many shows could make you care that much about a totally mute animal character. Like, I mean, look, I love animals. In comparison to human life, animals are they're I'm totally blanking on the words.
Secondary?
Yeah. They're sacrificable. There's a word that means that.
Like, you know, hold your ears.
Like, they can be collateral damage in comparison to humans. Mm-hmm. Like, in any other show, I would say we should not be this worried about the animal sidekick. Like, if it was a horse, like a normal, I don't care that much.
For example, Basil.
Absolutely, 100%. And he's more of a sentient creature than Appa is. But in this show, Appa is a main character, and it's as important as if anyone else in the main cast got kidnapped. He's a national treasure, and he's just gone. And more than anything, I mean, Appa's a great character, but, like, also, if a character, like, willingly sacrificed himself, I'm actually constantly pissed at shows when, like, a character willingly, this is kind of a tangent, when a character willingly sacrifices themselves and the characters go through a lot of effort to try to save them, to me, that dishonors the sacrifice. That character chose to sacrifice himself, leave them behind.
Finn?
Appa was kidnapped. Appa was kidnapped. What takes the emotional gut punch another level is, we talked about already, but Aang's emotional reaction to Appa getting kidnapped.
That's like his last connection. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's Momo.
But that's his last connection. Well, Momo sucks. And Appa gets stolen in season two in another stellar set of episodes where they're mm-hmm. in a library trying to find information on Sozin's comet, which is going to be like the most powerful day of the year for the Firebenders. Like, we gotta kill the Fire Lord. We gotta get rid of the Fire Lord before this comet comes, because it's gonna be terrible for everyone. And so Aang, Katara, and Sokka, and they find some other traveler, go down into the library where there is this super scary spirit librarian. Uh-huh. And I can't remember what exactly they do, but they break a rule. I think they steal.
Yeah.
Sokka steals something. He steals a paper, and it activates like this hidden library in the middle of a desert to sink. And so they're trying to get out, and Toph is like literally holding the weight of this entire underground building to keep her friends from dying. Noble. There are, I can't remember the call. They're like sand benders, basically. There are some subset of benders. They're like swamp kind of mud benders, sand benders in this show. And they come up and they're kind of like raiders. I don't know. And they steal Appa, but Toph can't help because she can't see, I'm air quoting, through the sand like she can through the rocks. And mm-hmm. she has to make a choice. Do I try to save Appa? Do I try to save, who do I save? And so there's that layer of, she didn't want to do, like, it is an impossible choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an incredible choice mid-season two to do that. And
took their car away.
And I think a lot of other shows, it would feel like a distraction. It'd feel like a way to just stretch the show out mm-hmm. to just, like, fill the time. But I think it then, feeds back and develops Aang as a character even mm-hmm. more for him to go through that. And so it does definitely contribute to the mm-hmm. overall narrative, for
and
sure.
And I think it's a couple episodes before we see him again, right?
Oh, yeah. He's gone for quite a while, like, if I remember correctly.
It's not until, I think, like, kind of like the Tales of Bossing say that he that's where he shows back up. Yep. So you go through the majority of season two without seeing him, which it really showcases his absence more because he's their transportation. Yep. So like, how are we going to get out of the desert? And honestly, I feel like when you're watching that in TV form, when you actually have to wait, makes that return like, oh my gosh, it's been forever since we've seen him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the library episode is season two, episode 10.
Okay.
And Appa's Last Days is episode 16. It's like five episodes later.
So it would have been like 6 weeks.
Yeah, in real time. Yeah.
Yeah, real time. So he's so hurt.
Yes.
He's been like abused.
How about for you? Did you have an answer to that same question you asked me? Do you have one particular moment that affected you emotionally?
I have a lot of moments that affect me emotionally in any media. Hold on. Is it terrible if I look up episodes real quick?
That's fine. I do want to talk about...
I'm trying to think of like a general...
Just kind of a side tangent to if we still have to appeal to you, the listener, if you have not watched the show. If not anything else, watch the show for the memes, because there's a lot of great memes that came out of this show. One of my favorites I will see. What I love is when I watch a thing and then I will see it absolutely randomly referenced out of nowhere on a totally unconnected thing. I don't remember the context exactly, but I'm a big college football fan, and recently on the college football subreddit, someone quoted, "There is no war in Bossing Say."
Yes, if you've ever seen that, there is no war in Bossing Say is good. Ironically, it's towards the end of season two. If I had a nickel for an episode that was a little similar to Andor, the prison escape episode from the Fire Nation prison is pretty good, because you kind of get to see a lot of... people banding together. I think emotion wise a set that sticks with me, and I believe it's season three, it's when Iroh is in jail,
which it's funny that that's what you mentioned, because you just mentioned bringing out the jail real fast. It would not be an episode of Rebels Robots without a moment. His weird, absolutely random thirst trap training montage where he gets real buff. That's a pretty moment for me. Anyways, continue. Also, we have We'll come back around in a moment. Please continue.
So it's, I believe it takes a place over the course of a couple episodes where it has been a while since I've seen it, but Iroh has been jailed, I think, by the Fire Nation, right?
Yes.
He's been jailed by the Fire Nation, and Zuko is not jailed. I think it's because Iroh helped Aang, the gang, escape at the end of season 2.
Probably.
Because Azula almost fried Aang from the inside out.
Yep.
That was bad.
Yeah.
And so that's what it was. Iroh is like upset at Zuko. Because Zuko will come talk to him and Iroh will not talk to him. And you kind of have, it almost makes me wonder if this was probably like the first time that Iroh openly disapproved or was disappointed in Zuko's choices. Because Zuko kind of like went immediately back into the like folds of his family in order to be accepted. Athena had a comment too. You have this whole like kind of couple set of scenes where like Zuko's really kind of going to plead with Iroh, and Iroh doesn't talk to them and finally kind of gives him some really harsh truth, which is absolutely necessary for him to hear. But one thing that's interesting about those scenes is every time you see Iroh, he's illuminated by light and Zuko's not.
Sure.
So you kind of have this scene, but I think that really fuels a lot of Zuko's growth and his future changes. Mm. Another scene that's great is when Zuko and Aang go to the source of firebending and you almost have like Zuko healing his own experience with firebending and Aang learning. I think that's really.
Is that with the two dragons?
Yes.
That for me is probably the peak of the show, in my opinion. Just like it's the third season. Everything has been like that, at least up to that point, the show is built up to that. Mm-hmm. You finally have the main hero and the quote main villain up to that point, reuniting, working together. It's almost impossible to describe the level of animation occurring with the dragon scene at the end. Mm-hmm. Just that you learn that the continual theme of characters being more complicated than they seem, that they are more than you think. Redemption, you learn that Uncle Iroh did not kill the last dragon. Was actually keeping them. It just makes that character even better.
That's his name, the last. They call him the last dragon, or is it the dragon of the West? Maybe
something like that.
He's got a nickname because they're like, he killed the last dragon. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, sure did.
It's
he didn't.
That episode does. I think the show never gets that good again. Even though I love the show, that's the peak for me.
And I think if we're going back to when Zuko and Iroh are at odds, that is when Iroh reveals to Zuko that he is also descended from the previous Avatar Roku on his mom's side.
Oh, interesting.
Which is like kind of a little earth shattering for him. I think another emotional, I think a few more moments. That first reveal in season 1 in the Air Temple.
Sure.
When Aang walks into that decimated room. And so Monk Gyatso is basically like his father figure.
Yeah.
And that, it's his remains. I feel like watching that is where you go, oh, this show has some kick to it. That's horrifying to walk
into. It's so true.
That is horrific for this 10-year-old to find out. I think he's 10. Just full traumatizing because it throws him into the Avatar state. And they almost don't get him out.
Yeah, the Avatar state is a very cool element of this show.
That's just wild. I think on a much smaller scale, one scene I do really like is when Toph finally masters metal bending. She has been captured because her family's like, because she ran away. Yeah. He's like, we want you back. And they put her in a metal box so she can't earthbend. She literally metal bends. That's so scary.
And then from then on, she's pretty much unstoppable for the rest of the show. She becomes the Terminator.
She's scary. You know, small moment of victory. Uh-huh. But so lots of, I'll probably think of something for next time we record.
Sure.
An emotional
moment. Oh, yeah. We could talk about this show for literally hours. There's so much. Every episode has something memorable in it, for sure. My other moment is, it's just like this show, overall, I will say, show is weirdly horny for a Nickelodeon show. The main moment, though, that I found just out of pocket, other than the Uncle Iroh thirst trap training montage, was there's a part later in the show where they've set up camp. And I don't remember exactly what he's doing, but Aang is like sneaking around and he goes into Sokka's tent. And Sokka is in a robe with
a rose
in his mouth waiting for Suki. And it's like, whoa, put it away. I find those moments deeply disturbing, but also deeply hilarious. Big moment because they're minors for sure.
Athena also went.
I like how her little fangs stick out. She's Darth Teefees over here.
She is Darth. We made this joke. She's Darth Teefees.
Did you have any other points you wanted to hit?
It's all good.
Yeah, man. Good show. Check it out.
Not a single bad episode.
I don't have one off the top of my head. I do remember there being. No, there is. I don't want to end on a negative point.
No, tell me. Spill.
It's a two or three episode arc actually where
is it the circus arc?
No, where they're trying to break out of the prison. The fire prison. There's someone in there. I think Suki is stuck in there. Yeah. So, Sokka and someone else get caught on purpose, right? Or they disguise themselves.
Oh my gosh, is this when they find Sokka and Katara's dad?
Yes? No? I'm totally blanking.
It's a side character.
I think they, maybe he does. Yeah, I think his dad does show up at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, because that was a huge thing.
Because they were about to escape and then they realized that his dad was going to get transported there. Yeah. So I just felt like it was really, it didn't do all the things I've talked about. It's kind of drawn out. It's tonally kind of all over the place. It really didn't feel like it was contributing much. It's kind of plotty without really feeling important. That was the couple of episodes that Alice and I both agree that like, this is just not this show's level of really tight writing, really, you know, narratively well constructive.
Do you want to know my least favorite episode?
What's that?
It's the one with Jet in that first season.
Oh, the like Freedom Fighters?
Yeah.
I didn't mind that as much, but I can understand that. Yeah. So that moves us on to meme minute, but it's longer than a minute. I don't think I have any memes.
I have memes and videos. I have so many videos, Cameron.
Please share your memes with me.
Okay. Transformers collectors in 2024.
You know, I gotta be honest. I'm loving the Transformers that are coming out this year. The engineering is absolutely insane. Paint apps and the fact that I can get most of the G1 cast pretty easily is great. You know, I gotta say, these toys, they are such a breath of fresh air. This movie is gonna reignite the franchise. I'm so excited to see what happens next.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god.
Transformers. Always a fan of that format.
All right, you ready?
Yes. It's just Starscream yelling. Yeah. Very good, very good.
Did you ever watch Chowder?
A little bit. We've talked about Chowder.
Okay,
I know the show.
This is an audio from Chowder.
Pepper spray? That sounds
delicious! I was wrong!
Bumblebee.
We sprayed with Raid.
That's really good. That's really good. I like that a lot.
I don't remember what this one is. Oh. It's Rise of the Beast. It's mine. Where,
What a great... That's a fun edit.
It's one of the fight scenes in Rise of the Beast towards the end, and they've
replaced... Oh, shoot. We were talking about Ron Perlman earlier.
Ron Perlman
is the voice of Optimus Primal in that movie. Anyways.
But they replaced the weapons with dodgeball and dodgeball noises. I don't remember what this one is. So, but it's G1. So, you know, it's some crackhead energy. Oh, it said, okay. So it says literally the entire Transformers fandom over like Megatron. And then there's a screenshot of a tweet that someone said about Transformers 1 that says, as a Transformers collector since 1976, I think I speak for everyone when I say it's time to bring Michael Bay back. So this is the fandom's response to that. You are either lying or you're stupid. I'm stupid. And I'm not going to say his Twitter name because I'm no doxer, but I'll tell you afterward. But if I ever text you something and immediately realize I'm wrong and the next text is I'm stupid, that's how you're supposed to read that. All right. You ready?
Yes.
Okay, we're in the visual memes now. So this is the two button format.
Yep.
Darkwing after Transformers 1, he hates both Orion Pax and D16. It's the guy sweating, not knowing which button to press.
It's either
faction.
Yeah, Decepticons or Autobots.
I don't want to play with you anymore. And it's the scene.
Oh, that's good.
From Transformers 1. When it's Megatron drops Optimus, but it's
the same from Toy Story 2 when Andy drops Woody into the trash can. That's so good. Oh, I love that.
You call it a near death experience. I call it a vibe check from God. I don't know what this is from. They've just posted Optimus Prime's face over it. He dies a lot in any iteration. I sent this in our friends group chat earlier. Are you typing the reference?
I want to know. So stupid.
Did it come up with it?
It's.
Is it a Supernatural reference?
I want to just double check. I think I know what it's from based on this. It seems to be a relatively... Wait, no, never mind. It's My Hero Academia, maybe? Oh. Man, I'm going to look so stupid if I get this wrong.
I don't know. It's like a live-action screenshot.
Anyways, continue. I'm going to keep looking.
I sent this in our friend group chat earlier. As with... sometimes things happen every 4 years that require a lot of people to go fill out a piece of paper, and the memes that come out of it are always good. And so we have got Godzilla winning all 538 of the Electoral College votes. So congratulations, Mr. President. Mr. President Godzilla. Looking forward to his presidential roar. So this is some screenshots from the Sonic 3 trailer, where Shadow encounters like the three trio, and he said it's captioned next monster versus villain. You're a colorful bunch. They've got Kong and Mothra. We don't want to fight you. Godzilla captioned as Knuckles. Actually, I would very much like to fight them. The always iconic.
We're going to beat you to death.
It's the three. The big three from the end of Transformers 1. And then when I'm in a competition and I win, and it's a clip of Chromia, the winner from the Icon 5000.
Wow.
They had to add an extra zero so it wasn't the Daytona 500. That's all. That's all I got. I'm the only meme provider this week.
Well, I am not finding the original source of that meme. I'm seeing
lost
it.
Lost to the internet.
Yeah, I want to take one last stab at it. Will you send me that meme so I can do a reverse image search?
Yeah, it's super pixelated.
While we're doing that, thank you, as always, to our dear friend, the great musician. We were watching a movie yesterday. This is going to be super obscure. Alice and I were watching the film... Mr. Holland's Opus, which is about a music teacher from the 60s, and he asks his students, name a American composer, and no one could. And neither could Allison or I off the top of our head. I should have said Caleb Jacoby. Caleb Jacoby, great American composer who made our intro and outro music.
Oh, my.
Props to Rachel for our artwork and, quote, Twitter account. As long as that platform may or may not continue to exist.
Props to Cameron for running our Facebook and our Instagram.
Give us something to read. Oh, also props to Athena. I was going to see if she reacted. She did not. For editing. Awake. Yeah. You just sent me everything. Thanks.
Well, Cameron, sometimes when I don't, you then ask.
It looks a lot like Harry Potter.
You look a lot like Harry Potter.
But his face is covered up by Optimus Prime's face, so it's hard to tell. Thanks to Athena for editing the pod. Give us something to read on the pod. Leave a review, tweet, or DM us memes or opinions. Let us know if you like After Last Airbender, what you like about it. If you don't like about it, let us know.
And if you don't, watch it again until you do.
The rewatches will continue until morale improves. It's probably just going to give me Optimus Prime. No?
It looks like you're looking for images of Optimus Prime.
Yeah. Yeah. Next time, well, obviously the Godzilla prequel comic. But other than that, I don't know. We haven't talked about it yet.
Or if you want us to talk about something other than the Godzilla prequel comic, just let us know.
If you want to talk about literally anything else, one like and we will not talk about the Godzilla prequel comic. One like. I'm totally forgetting what the exact meme format there is. Well, still don't know. I have a feeling Megan probably knows. I don't know. She's very meme conscious. Let us know, Megan, what you call a near-death experience. I call it a vibe check from God is from, because we're not finding the original source. That's cool. Okay, we talked a lot longer than I anticipated. This was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
We have one more episode, and then after that will be Star Wars. It's the 80s, except for it's a Star Wars show with Jude Law, and Jude Law's also there.
Goonies!
It's called Star Goonies. Yes, that's exactly what it's called. Called Skeleton Crew, of course. Out of context, that's a weird Star Wars name. Because it's not Star Wars The Skeleton Crew. It's technically just called Skeleton Crew.
It's just an addition to the Ghost Crew.
All skeletons in it.
It's all skeletons in it.
All right. As always... No, that's not how we do this. This is Cameron and Rachel signing off saying... Who's a better mode of transportation, Momo or Athena?
Good
night, everyone.